back to that 590 show. Very happy to have our next guest on, Rob Raines from STLSportsPage.com. He does a great job of covering the Cardinals there. You can follow him on Twitter at Rob Raines. Rob, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys tonight?
Doing very well, sir. Are you kind of surprised, as almost as everybody else is, that Tommy Pham is taking a real leadership role with this team?
Well, you know, he has the age. I mean, he has the experience. I mean, he's been around for a long time. Maybe not at the big league level, but he certainly has been in the system for a long time. I mean, he's 29 years old, so he's not like a real young player. And that, you know, it seems like, you know, different players take on different kind of personalities. So, I mean, maybe that's just more of his personality, and certainly getting a chance to play and be a regular and having success gives him that opportunity and gives him that platform to you know, kind of lead by example, which I mean, you don't have when you're not playing or don't have when you're not playing well.
But little surprise, though, that it's not, you know, that he's the one that's kind of taken this leadership mantle and ran with it. It's not Yadier Molina. It's not Adam Wainwright. It's not Lance Lynn. It's not one of the veterans who've been there for a while. It's Tommy Pham, who's been kind of yo-yoed between the Major League club and the minors.
Well, as I say, two things. It depends on a guy's personality. I mean, Yadi leads by example, but he's quiet. I mean, he's not a vocal guy. Matt Carpenter's not a vocal guy. You know, we don't know what goes on inside the clubhouse behind closed doors, you know, what kind of messages they're relaying to the players. And I say this about the pitching staff, no matter, you know, what a good guy Adam Wainwright is or whatever, it is hard for a starting pitcher, you know, to be a leader of a ball club, in my opinion, because they just are not an everyday player. To me, it has to be an everyday player who is playing well, who is a older, you know, more of a veteran-type player. I mean, as I say, I don't really put Pham in a young player category, even though he maybe doesn't have a lot of major league experience. To me, he is a veteran player because he has a lot of experience. It's just not all at the big league level.
What do you make of Michael Wacha's start yesterday? Do you think that kind of helped right the ship, or it was just kind of an anomaly that, yeah, you know what, we're still kind of on the fence on how he's going to be as a starter going forward, but he's still going to be effective?
I think you have to be on that fence every time he goes out to start. I mean, yeah, it was very good that he did pitch much better. And first time, you know, I guess what, five of the last six, he failed to go past the fifth inning, so, or into the fifth inning. So, you know, that's not a good trend for a starting pitcher. So he needed that kind of start, but now he needs another one. You know, he needs to go out his next time out and do the same thing. So that's where you are with him. You just don't know, if I think, from a start-to-start basis, what kind of performance you're going to get until he strings four or five or six of these kind of starts together. Then maybe you have a little more confidence that he's corrected the problems.
Starting pitching was such the strongest aspect of this Cardinals team for a long time. And then you've seen the struggles that Wacha had until recently. You've seen the struggles that Wainwright's had, the struggles that Lynn's had, and Mike Leake as well. Do you think there's a bigger issue there, or do you think this is just a long season, there's going to be peaks and valleys?
Well, there's always peaks and valleys, but I do think it's, you know, it probably the answer is somewhere in between. You know, that when those guys were doing as well as they were doing, you know, they probably weren't as good as their performance, and I don't think they're necessarily probably as bad as their performance is right now. So I think, you know, the truth and the leveling out is probably somewhere in between. You know, saying that, you know, I mean, that there are going to be times when the pitchers, you know, get lifted up by the offense and win some games that maybe they necessarily didn't deserve to win because of how they pitched. But then there's other times when the offense is not getting the job done. The pitchers have to go, you know, out there and throw a shutout or a one- or two-run game to win. So those things all tend to even out in my mind. You know, if you're good enough, you'll win. If you're not good enough, you won't.
The Cardinals are in Arizona tonight to take on the Diamondbacks. And this Diamondbacks team, they're finally putting everything together. The team that they thought everybody was going to see a couple years ago, this year we're seeing it. Paul Goldschmidt is looking like an MVP candidate. Just how for real is this Arizona Diamondbacks team?
They're good. I mean, that's a tough division. I mean, right now, you know, you'd have three playoff teams out of the four teams in that division.
Absolutely.
You know, the Rockies and the Diamondbacks would be the wild cards, and the Dodgers would be the division champion. They're three good teams, and I think that's – I really don't see that changing. I don't see anybody in the East or anybody in the Central that's going to have a shot really at the wild card. I mean, so I think unless those teams fall completely on their face, then I think, you know, that's how that race is going to end up. And then, you know, there'll be somebody will win the East and somebody will win the Central. And, well, somebody's going to win the East, but the Nationals, but there's not going to be anybody else that'll contend in that division, I don't think. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting race, though. I mean, they're putting together a very, very good season. And you're right, Goldschmidt is, you know, probably one of the top five players in the league, and he's having an all-star MVP caliber year.
Carlos Martinez on the bump for the Cardinals tonight. He's 6-6 with a 2.87 ERA. The All-Star game is in 2 weeks, so the Cardinals are going to have one representative in the Midsummer Classic. It's probably just going to be Carlos Martinez, right?
I don't see anybody else. I mean, you know, some of those other guys have decent numbers, but there's a lot of competition for all those spots. So, you know, I if I had to bet right now, I would bet that Martinez will be their only guy.
With Dexter Fowler now on the 10-day DL, and now they have Randall Grichuk recalled from Memphis, he's had a nice couple of games, hit a couple of big home runs, and he's played pretty well. When Dexter Fowler comes back from the DL, who gets to sit on the bench and who gets us back to Memphis?
That's a good question. I mean, they could do a lot of different things. I mean, don't forget, they're still carrying an extra pitcher, so you could move a pitcher off the staff. You know, Myers came up there because of, you know, Seager's going out, but you know, you got a little, you know, few flexible guys that could be moved off the pitching staff. You know, the more interesting question to me is who goes when Colton Wong comes back, which will be ahead of Bauer coming back. You know, so you know, do they keep Paul DeJong? Do they do something Greg Garcia? Do they send a pitcher out then? I mean, there's a lot of variables at play on that decision that I think will come first. But I think, you know, Grichuk's going to get his chance to play right now with Fowler being out. I mean, he's going to start every one of these games, I'm sure, while Fowler's out. Fowler will probably play the most of them in the center, and then probably Martinez will play a little bit when you want to get Piscotty a day off, but he'll probably be primarily the odd guy out there and be the bench guy. But, you know, it's their chance to show it. I think it's going to be, especially when the team has not played as well as you would like to with the play, I think they're going to ride the hot hand. I mean, I think whoever's playing the best will keep playing.
Can you see that maybe Elymas Diaz goes down to Memphis and see if they can correct his swing?
It's possible. I really don't think he's probably quite at that point yet. I admit I'm probably a more ardent supporter of Elymas than some other guys, and I just think sometimes his performance isn't accurately measured by, you know, the raw statistics that you see in the box scores and things like that. But, you know, but saying that, DeJong is going to probably deserve a chance to play, you know, somewhere. So, I mean, I think you're probably going to see a rotation there of guys. And again, who's going to be the odd guy out? I mean, I would keep, you know, Diaz and DeJong right now before we keep Greg Garcia. I mean, Greg Garcia's a nice guy to have on a team, but he's not going to be a star player. He's not going to be a regular, I don't think. And he does a good job of pinch hitting, but I just think they've got some better options right now than him. Now, saying that, you know, he's out of options. So if you, you know, try to move him down to Memphis, somebody would no doubt claim him, and you'd lose him to another organization. So that's, you know, there's going to be a lot of, you know, moving pieces here in the next, you know, 3 weeks or so. We're about 3 weeks into, you know, John Mozeliak's 4 to 6 week window of evaluating this team and kind of deciding if they're going to be buyers or sellers or some combination before the All-Star break. We're right in the middle of that, and I think everything is everything's fair game. I think everything's on the table right now.
What, like, let's say in 3 weeks that Mozeliak was talking about, let's say it's the status quo. The Cardinals are still kind of trending down, but they're still kind of in the division. What do? Do they go ahead and try to win the division this year and cross their fingers they'll make it out of the first round of the playoffs? Or can you see them, you know, go ahead and being sellers at the trade deadline and pick up some pieces and maybe have a great team that's going to be competitive for the next 4 or 5?
I see a combination of the two. I mean, I don't think they're going to be buyers exclusively. I don't think they're going to be sellers exclusively. Yeah, because I think the quality of the competition, the quality of the race in the National League Central complicates that. Because, yeah, you're sitting here 4.5 games out of first place. Well, okay, we make this move or that move, maybe we can win the division, but what's it going to cost us, you know, for the next couple of years? And I don't think they will do – I don't think any move that they make, whether it's buying a player, selling a player, whatever, will be designed with the intention of, okay, let's just get in the playoffs. You know, they've done that. You know, I mean, I think that any move that they make is going to be predicated on, will this help us get to the World Series? That, to me, is their goal. That, to me, is the moves, the question they have to answer when they decide what moves to make. I think the guys that, you know, are free agents at the end of this year are probably the most vulnerable for trades, especially if they have a candidate that they think can replace them, at least for the balance in the short term, and not really have a tremendous amount of drop-off, or at least maybe a little bit drop-off now, but a promise of an upside more in the future. So, you know, that's the kind of guys I think you watch for as we get closer to the trading deadline.
If Alex Reyes were healthy, and let's say he was in the starting rotation and he was effective, would that make Michael Wacha the odd man out? And if he was the odd man out, would he be in the bullpen? And would that make either O or Rosenthal more vulnerable to a trade?
Yes. But, you know, he's not pitching this year.
Sure.
I just talked to Alex the other day. I got a story that will be posted on him tomorrow about how his off, you know, year not pitching is going. But I still like the idea of pitching Wacha in the bullpen anyway. I mean, even without Alex Reyes being in here, I think it – you know, his first time through the rotation, he said opponents are hitting like 182 against him. I mean, I think he could be that swing kind of reliever, that swing kind of guy that you know, they talked about having, that can give you, you know, come in the fifth inning or pitch it two or three innings. I mean, I think Lyons could be that guy too. So I think they've got some options there. I think that, you know, Weaver could start. I think that, you know, I still think, you know, maybe not exclusively in my opinion, but I think Tyler Lyons could be an effective starting pitcher in the big leagues. And maybe not an ace, maybe not a number two, but at the back end of the rotation, I think there's a lot of teams that he would have a role on in the rotation. I think the guy that probably could be moved at the trading deadline that would give you the most in return, if you're willing to do this, is Trevor Rosenthal.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that, because he's signed through next year, you know, he's arbitration eligible, he's going to make, you know, $6+ million next year, and then he's a Scott Boras guy, so he's going to hit free agency and want a lot of money to be a closer after next year. So, but a team getting him now would know that they have him for the rest of this year, and they have him for all of next year, and if they don't think they can sign him next year, then they could trade him at the trading deadline and get something back. So I think, you know, you saw the prices that Chapman got, you saw the prices that Andrew Miller got at the trading deadline last year, and I think the Cardinals would be trying to get, you know, something, you know, kind of equivalent to that. Now, saying that, Rosenthal has been spotty. You know, he's not the closer right now, and I think there are teams that have doubts about whether he can be an effective closer. You know, some of the eighth innings he pitches have been lights out, and some he, you know, gets knocked around. So that's going to affect the return too. I don't think there's any question about it.
Do you think that part of the reason why Rosenthal has been as ineffective lately as he has been is because he's not given that closer role? He's not been told, you know what, you're the man. Ninth inning, you're the guy who's going to come in, and you're the one who's going to shut the door. Do you think that's part of the reason why? Because he seems to have a little bit of a fragile psyche where, you know, he wanted to be a starter, he didn't get that, and now, you know, he was the closer for the Cardinals a couple years ago. Then you bring in you know, maybe his psyche's a little bit hurt about that. Maybe another team could pick him up and go, yeah, you know what, you're the man, you're our ninth inning guy. Maybe he'll flourish under that.
Possibly. I don't see that in him, though, a little bit. I mean, I think he, you know, having talked to him, you know, like about this, you know, maybe back in spring training and stuff, I mean, he said, my role is to go out there and pitch well. You know, I just didn't pitch well last year in whatever role I was in. And I think he knows, too, that if he goes out there and his lights out and gets guys out in the eighth inning, you know, on a continuous basis, he's going to get his chances to save games. You know, I mean, all we know is kind of been off and on, too, and there's going to be nights that even if O was pitching great, he still is going to need a night off occasionally. So, you know, I think the fact is that the team has not played well enough to really have enough save opportunities for either one of those guys to develop, you know, work consistently and be the guys that the team thought they were going to be coming into the season.
Rob Raines joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at Rob Raines. Rob, this morning, Buster Olney from the Mothership said that Major League Baseball is going to be pushing really hard for a pitch clock to help speed up the games. And he's reporting that the MLBPA, in response to that, is going to say, okay, well, if you want a pitch clock, then we want an electronic strike zone. You're going to have a home plate umpire, but it's just a call out and safe at the plate, and that's it. They're not going to be calling balls and strikes. Do you foresee something like that ever happening? And are you in favor of it?
Ever is a long time. But no, I am not in favor of that, and I don't see it happening. I just think there's too many, you know, there's too many variables involved there. I don't think they need a pitch clock either. I mean, I just, you know, to me, baseball is the, you know, that's one of the things we've always talked about baseball is there is no clock. You know, it's a game that's played by human beings, and just, you know, you want to speed up the game, I'll tell you exactly how to speed it up. Get rid of a minute of commercials in between innings.
Well, you know they're never going to do that.
Well, yeah. So, but then don't give me all this nonsense about wanting to speed up the game, because that's the biggest thing, is slow down the game.
Okay,
two and a half minutes that they have in between innings for commercials.
And you know what? Those World Series games, those are some really long games. I didn't hear anybody complaining about it then, about how these games are too long. Yeah, you know what? The World Series game sure was exciting, but man, it took too long. No one ever said that.
No one ever says it when any games are exciting. You know, I mean, I think it's just, you know, it's. The problem is that they're trying to decide how to make it more of a game more appealing, and I get this. They're trying to make the game more appealing to a younger audience that is used to more action-oriented sports, you know, video games or, you know, whatever. And I think that's part of the problem, is that they're, you know, they keep seeing the demographics and the average age. I think they said the average age of people watching the World Series last year was 54 years old, and that's an older audience. I mean, and they want to get younger, and they think the way to get younger is by making the game faster. But I don't think so. I mean, there's to me, you know, a pitch clock or the between innings or whatever, I mean, that doesn't change the game. You know, it doesn't, you know, they thought that the, you know, holding up four fingers and let's intentionally walk this guy without throwing four pitches is going to speed up the game.
Yeah.
That hadn't happened.
I think what baseball is trying to do as well is that they're trying to get more of a national stage too, where they used to own it and they lost it to the NFL and now they're even kind of losing it to the NBA. Regionally, locally, you know, the ratings are good and the draw at the gate is good. It's just that when you're talking about like the national games on ESPN or Fox, the ratings aren't all that good because I think people, they're more interested in just their local team. They're not interested in seeing, you know, like here locally, the game between like Arizona and the Dodgers. I mean, how many people in St. Louis are really going to watch that? They're more interested in the Cardinals and that's it.
Well, baseball has cut them, you know, cut off their nose to spite their face because of that. Because they used to always talk about what the ratings were for the game of the week and all this kind of stuff. Well, that's because that was the only national game on television every week. You know, you had one choice. I mean, you watched your team. Okay, if you're, you know, I grew up in Springfield, Missouri. We might get one Cardinal game every other Sunday on television. You know, the rest of the games were not on television. So now every game is on television. Every game, you know, for every other team is on television. It's not just your own games. And there's just, like you said, there's no reason really for anybody in St. Louis to watch a game between, you know, Milwaukee and Toronto. We just don't care. You know, and every time that they have a national game on ESPN almost, it seems like it's, you know, the Red Sox or the Yankees or the Dodgers or the Cubs. You know, you just see the same teams over and over and over again.
There's no
specialization about it. There's nothing special about watching that game. You know, when I was a kid growing up, and I mean, I'm dating myself here, but, you know, that Saturday afternoon game of the week, I always made a point to try to watch it because, I mean, it might be the only time I got to see the Orioles play that year. It might be the only time I got to see Willie Mays bat that year. You know what I mean? Other than the All-Star game or the World Series.
So yeah.
That was what was special about those games, and that's why those ratings were so much higher. And that baseball, you're never going to get that back. Trying to get that back is ridiculous. Just make it a regional sport. Get fans to watch your team's games. Get fans to watch. Okay, maybe if there's a big national story, they might tune in and watch. But otherwise, you know, to concentrate on what's your strength, and your strength is your local audience and the teams that are the fans that care about one particular team.
Rob, go ahead, Rocky.
Yeah, Rob, I was just looking at the lineup for today's game. I had a really quick question, just a little thing that jumped out to me. I wanted to see if maybe you've noted this or if it's something in the future that you could take note of, and that is Randall Grigg's spot in the lineup. Came back, obviously, from the minors. They put him in at four, hits the home run. They put him in two. Yesterday, he hits another home run. Today, he's slotted in at six. Any idea why Matheny's maybe having him jump around here after his switch? Is it just that as long as he's hitting, they're going to find a spot for him one way or another? It just seems interesting to me to bring a guy up from a long absence in the minors and then immediately switch him in three different spots back to back to back.
Well, you caught me a little bit off guard because I hadn't looked at the lineup yet for tonight's game. So I don't know. Do you have the whole lineup there in front of you?
I can give me just one moment here as I go to the Cardinals' Twitter.
I can't really tell you why Grichik's hitting six until I know who's hitting. You know,
Grichik is hitting. It goes Carpenter, Pham, Piscotty, Jerko, Molina, Grichik, DeYoung, Garcia, Martinez.
So I think probably the reason is because they're trying to, you know, they like, obviously Carpenter's back. He's going to hit leadoff. Pham has, you know, been very hot, you know, two hits and two walks. They like him, I think, hitting second. And then they like Jerko hitting cleanup. So, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily anything that Grichik, you know, brings to that spot in the lineup other than just they like the guys that are in those other spots who've had success, you know, in those spots, you know. And maybe they're thinking also that if you pot him sixth, maybe some of those other guys will be on base when he comes up to bat. I don't know. I wouldn't read too much into that, no.
Rob, we appreciate your insight as always, sir. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
All right, will do. Thanks, you guys, too.
Thanks,
appreciate
Rob.
It.
That is Rob Raines from STLSportsPage.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Rob Raines. Let's take a commercial break, and then coming up on the other side, we're going to be joined by Mike Moriel from NHL.com. You're listening to That 590 Show right here on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.